Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come to order. We have quite an agenda today, and I'm sitting in for Senator Limmer because he has several bills on the agenda today. And my understanding from Senator Limmer is we are determined to get through this agenda. We have four for Senator Limmer and one for me. So we're going to work through it and hopefully finish in a reasonable amount of time. So with that, members, Senator Limmer is here to present Senate File 874 regarding informa pauperis proceedings, court reimbursement, and payment authorization. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 874 is a bill that authorized the court to seek partial payment or reimbursement of costs from a party proceeding informa pauperis. Currently, any court in the state of Minnesota may authorize defense of any civil action or appeal without prepayment of fees costs by any natural person. Upon finding of the court that the person may proceed in forma pauperis, the person meeting the requirements would be a person who is receiving public assistance or represented by an attorney on behalf of a civil legal service, or who has an annual income of not greater than 125% of the poverty line. This bill that I have before you is to have the committee consider a little different approach to that, and that we would ask the court to consider whether or not the defendant could pay a portion of the fees, costs, that the court may order, giving the court authority to do so. In the original bill that we have before you, we have one to three options that the court could consider. The first one would be as a payment of a fee by the defendant of not less than $75, or a partial payment of fees, costs, and other securities, or reimbursement of all or a portion of fees that may be incurred that would be directed by the court after analysis that the court would consider. The court administrator would transmit any fees or payments to the Commissioner of Management and Budget for deposit in the state treasury and credit it to the general fund. As a result of this bill, there has been some discussion of whether or not we could alter or tweak this language a little bit. I have an A2 amendment that would adjust this slightly, and if we could have someone pass out the A2 amendment, we could consider that at this time. And if there's anyone in the audience that would wish to give any testimony on the bill, they're certainly welcome to join me on the testifying table.
Senator Limmer, while we hand out the A2 amendment, may I ask you a question about your bill? I'm wondering what would be the basis for the court to determine the new information that someone has during the proceedings become able to pay these costs?
Well, right now the court is charged with the authority to create a finding by the court of whether or not the person is eligible for an informa pauperis in the first place. And as a result, court would have to question and analyze responses from the individual of whether or not they could provide information to determine. First, once informa pauperis is considered, then to consider payments as well, or partial payments.
So, Senator Limmer, you're expecting that somewhere the court might learn that there is a change in circumstances for this party in the court and then decide to impose or rescind the informa pauperis or make a finding that the litigant should pay.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Members, we have the A2 amendment, and Senator Limmer would offer the A2 amendment. It is an author's amendment. Senator Limmer, would you like us to act first, or would you like to
As an author's amendment, I would offer the A2 amendment.
Senator Limmer requests that the A2 be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The A2 is adopted. Senator
Chair,
Limmer.
I'm not, do we have a quorum yet? I know that Senator Newman was here. He checked in.
Senator Limmer, that's a good point. We may have to revote on the A2 when we have a quorum. But nonetheless, if you would let us know the contents of A2 and how it impacts your bill.
I'll reoffer the A2 as an author's amendment when we have a quorum, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, after some discussion about the bill itself, the A2 is a modified version. If you look at your first, or the bill itself, Senate File 874, and bring your attention to lines, page 1, lines 21 through 24, we would take that language and delete it. And on page 2, we would delete lines 1 through 3.
And Senator Limmer, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Senator Goodwin has joined us, and we now do have a quorum.
Okay.
And we had just voted while you were out of the room, Senator Goodwin, and so now we need to re-vote on an author's amendment now that you're here. And if you don't mind, Senator Limmer, he had asked as an author's amendment that we adopt the A2 amendment. And while everyone's still in the room, I fear we're going to have some troubles with that this afternoon. While everyone is here, I would ask our Senator Limmer would move the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The A2 is adopted. I'm sorry for the interruption, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just got done explaining the deletions in the bill. And then if I can bring your attention to the A2 amendment on line 4. This is a rewording. There was a question of whether or not that $75 fee was going to be a floor fee, a minimum, that would be a starting point. That really was not the consideration that I had intended. However, if you look at lines 4 of the amendment, it's rather self-explanatory. If at the following commencement of the action the party is or becomes able to pay all or a portion of the fees, costs, and security for costs, the court may order payment of a fee of $75 or reimbursement or partial payment of all or a portion of the fees, costs, and security for costs. This $75 fee is similar to the defendant's copay for public defender services. The amendment gets rid of this debt potential idea that $75 is a floor payment or a beginning point. This amendment gives judges discretion to require a higher payment if they believe that the defendant is capable. And additionally, the amendment gives the court the authority to allow a payment plan rather than require one lump sum, all or nothing concept. And I stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. members, there is a fiscal note in your packet of information. Mr. Turner, I don't see him. Oh, there he is. Well, are there questions from members for Senator Limmer? We do have a testifier here. Ms. Melinda Hugdahl is here to testify on this bill. And Mr. Turner is back. So, Mr. Turner, can you just explain the fiscal note and the savings that's expected from Senator Limmer's bill?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. The fiscal note is it's drawn to House File 1023, which is the identical House companion to Senate File 874. And the court figured that this would bring in $916,000 per year. Currently, this provision is in the House budget bill and is being carried in the House budget bill. If the committee passes this, it will be an outlier and then become part of the conference committee and a Senate outlier matching up with the House budget bill.
All right, and Ms. Hugdahl? Welcome to the committee. I assure you you're not in the tax committee, and I won't ask you about tax policy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Melinda Hugdahl from Legal Services. Madam Chair, I appreciate that because I think tax is one of my worst classes in law school, so I'm sure I would give you an extremely unintelligent answer to whatever question you would ask. I talked with Senator Limmer about this provision, and really particularly, I don't have any need to comment on it with the A2 amendment that's adopted. So thank you to Senator Limmer and the committee.
All right. Are there other folks here that are prepared to testify or would like to testify regarding Senate File 874 as amended? Seeing none, further questions or comments from members? Senator Limmer would move the adoption of Senate File 874 as amended. Senator Limmer moves that 874 as amended proceed to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The Senate File 874 has been sent to Finance. Thank you, Senator Limmer.
Thank you.
Senator Limmer also has Senate File 875 regarding motor vehicle insurance and the failure to obtain it. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 875 is exactly what you described. We have a representative from our court administrator's office who would like to explain the bill at this time. And I would like to introduce Janet Marshall, Supreme Court Administrator's Office.
Good afternoon, Ms. Marshall. Before that, Senator Limmer, I understand that there is an A3 author's amendment that you wanted to proceed with in order to get it in the shape that you would like.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the A3 amendment as an author's amendment.
All those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A3 is adopted. Okay, the bill is now in the order you'd like, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, one other question in this bill, and I've got to check with staff. There was a question of whether or not Sections 8 and 9 are included in this, or has that been removed? I see we just removed it. I'm sorry.
We just acted on that, Senator Limmer. All right. And I'm sorry for the interruption. Ms. Marshall.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Janet Marshall, and I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. And I am here to explain the bill, and I'll try to make it interesting. This bill is a conglomeration of ideas that came from court staff and judges from throughout the state. Most of it is nothing more than trying to do some cleanup of the statutes because of various things that have evolved over the years. The first one is a proposal to set up an administrative process for citations for no insurance. Under current law, there is an administrative process. When a person gets a no proof of insurance ticket, they can come in and show proof that they had insurance that day. And if so, then the ticket is usually taken care of at that point. There is no parallel language for no insurance. And, for example, in Hennepin County alone, approximately 37% of all the no insurance tickets are dismissed or let go of because the person actually did have insurance on that day. So what we're attempting to do here is to set up a parallel process where there is an administrative process to come in and process your case of a citation for no insurance. Section 2 came from the Minnesota Supreme Court. This has to do with errors or omissions in the preparation of ballots and errors committed by election officials. Under current law, a petitioner can claim that there's been an error or an omission on a local or statewide ballot. That petition is filed with the Supreme Court. The law, however, does not require that the petition be served on the candidates, even if the candidates have a vested interest in what the ballot says. What the current process is that the Supreme Court will halt proceedings and they will tell the petitioner to serve the candidates on the ballot. This adds a few days to the process. These are oftentimes sensitive, and the Supreme Court Commissioner's Office thought it would be good if we could just automatically serve the candidates at the same time that the person who allegedly made the mistake is served. Section 3 is the sex offender registration form. In most counties today, the sex offender registration form is completed by the corrections officer, not the court. So we just wanted to have that clarified in the statute that it's the corrections officer, the probation officer, who completes sex offender registration forms. Section 6 and 7 are what we're calling county court cleanup language, or state funding cleanup. All of the trial courts in the state became funded by the state in 2005. And when that happened, some of the duties that were performed by the local court officials were assumed by other county officials. And from time to time, we find little statutes that still say that things shall be filed with the court administrator when actually it's a different county office, often the auditor or the treasurer. So both Section 6 and 7 reflect statutory cleanup because those duties are now performed by someone in the county, not by the court administrator. Sections 8 and 9 were removed by the author's amendment. Section 10 is another, 10 and 11 are another statutory cleanups to reflect that court administrators no longer perform these duties, and they're performed by someone else in the county. Section 12, there was some question about how dismissals of orders for protection should be served on the defendant. And to be quite truthful, it was done in a lot of different ways throughout the state. We're asking for uniformity in the statute, some clarification so that dismissals of orders for protection are served the same way on everybody throughout the state. Sections 13 and 14, the court system has been very aggressive in trying to move into the 21st century, and we do a lot of archival imaging of documents, and we're moving towards e-filing of documents. For all other civil cases, if you retain an archival quality copy of a document, you can destroy the original. We would like to have that same permission to do the same thing in probate cases. This will not apply to the original wills, which is the one question that people have asked us. It just says if you have the probate document in archival quality, which is usually, you know, on disk, then you can destroy the paper originals.
Ms. Marshall, even yes. During the proceedings, you're destroying documents that are being filed in while the case is proceeding?
Madam Chair, what happens is once they get imaged, if someone wants a copy, then they print out that copy.
And then I would assume that you have all kinds of backup and offsite storage and all those things.
And we actually, Madam Chair, we also do have a record retention schedule, and I'd have to go back and look at what it is for probate documents.
Thank you.
Section 15 is a, the last section, we have a repealer section, and there are three statutes there that we are recommending being repealed. The first one is records of commissions. We no longer keep records of commissions. There's another statute that says that's handled by a different by the county. The second one is an old reference from when probate court used to belong to the counties, and it talks about nothing can happen to probate court records unless approved by the county board. And since the county board no longer has any authority over the probate court, we're recommending that that be repealed. And the last one is a report on interception of communications. This is a report that the state court administrator's office has to prepare every other year. And what it represents is all county attorneys and judges and are supposed to tell us, file a piece of paper with the court administrator's office when they've applied for something like a wiretap or a pen register, and then judges have to tell us when they've when they have approved them. And then every 2 years we spend approximately 100 hours of staff time compiling this report and filing it with the legislative auditor's office. This is one of those things that when people asked us is there anything that maybe you don't need to do anymore, we offer this one up as a suggestion. Part of the concern is we don't even know how accurate the reports are. You know, we're relying on everybody to remember to send a piece of paper to the state court administrator's office in these circumstances. So we're offering it up as something that we aren't sure.
Ms. Marshall, I would think that this is an important document for the accountability of what are, in some people's views, an extreme measure. I mean, it's a law enforcement intrusion authorized by the court, but that's one of the ways that we can hold these folks accountable for those types of actions. So I'm wondering, is there any other kind of reporting that we could rely on that's being done as an alternative that would report the same information? Or are you saying that we should not be reporting and maintaining those records at all?
Madam Chair, I don't know of another way that this is reported. I will say in the 32 years that I've worked for the State Court Administrator's Office, I've never once been asked to see this report. We've had no requests for it. But if you think that it's important that we do it and file it with the Legislative Auditor's Office, we'd be happy to keep doing it.
Well, I can see why this might be a protection. Senator Limmer, your thoughts on that section?
I'm open to the committee will, Madam Chair, on this. Perhaps anyone else may want to contribute to the discussion.
Senator Harrington, any thoughts on that?
I would, Madam Chair, I would tend to concur with you that I think it would be wise that someone have control of that record. It is a reasonable check and balance, although I would tend to agree with the testifier that I don't remember anybody ever going back to ask for it, but we keep records on things, I think, sometimes simply because we want to, and especially in the case of wiretaps or pen registers, which are one of the most intrusive law enforcement activities we have, I would want to make sure that there is at least some outside source that is keeping track of that.
Senator Harrington. Oh, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Instead of getting into a lot of deep weeds on this, I'm going to move that on page 10.5, we remove the reference in the repealer regarding statute 626A.17 and change the word, well, I guess we would leave the word are repealed in the sentence and make any graphical or grammatical errors to accommodate that.
So Senator Limmer moves on 10.4 to add the word and after 359.061. And on 10.5 to delete the word and 626A.17. Is that correct, Senator Limmer?
That's correct.
I'm advised, Senator Limmer, that the and goes after subdivision 3 on 10.4.
As noted, Madam Chair.
All right. Any further questions or comments about the amendment? Would anyone here like to testify regarding the amendment that's being considered at this point? Well, all those then in favor of Senator Limmer's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The oral amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 875. Questions for Ms. Marshall or Senator Limmer? Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, thank you. I might have missed this. I apologize. But was there an explanation given for the A3 amendment provision that deleted Sections 8 and 9? And I ask mostly for my own information because I know at least the Hennepin County bench administration has been pushing for the provisions that are in the bill. So. Perhaps you could explain.
Senator Latz, you didn't miss anything. It was offered as an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author had wished. If you'd like to hear the rationale for that, Senator Limmer, but you didn't miss it, Senator Latz. So, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Latz. I decided as an author's amendment to remove those provisions from the bill. It appears as though there's a lot more following on both sides of the issue regarding that. And I think I would rather have the committee consider this through discussion through the interim. And it seems like there's a deeper issue involved, and I didn't want to make any quick judgment regarding this. Despite the concern of the Hennepin County bench, there seems to be others elsewhere on the bench in the Minnesota judiciary that has a different opinion. And we really haven't had a lot of notice given to the community in the court community for this, And instead of going forward in a quick decision, I think we're just going to hold it. We'll discuss this through the interim, and we'll arrive at some destination before the next year.
Thank you. Members, I would point out that there is a fiscal note. And because of the amendments that have been adopted, we have just one provision that still has a fiscal impact. It is on page, well, it's the last page in the fiscal note. And Mr. Turner, would you just discuss it? It's the section, members, that talks about the proof of insurance provision. Mr. Turner.
Yes, Madam Chairman, members. After the adoption of the A3 amendment, it's true there's only one provision that has fiscal impact. It's section 1, establishing a process for administrative dismissal of a citation for failure to provide vehicle insurance. The court calculated a workload reduction, the equivalent of $62,000. Once again, this bill this provision is part of the House budget bill, and it's being tracked as a savings under the district court budget in the House. And I would suggest that if the committee passes this, they keep it with the previous bill, send it to finance, and then it will be discussed as an outlier in the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank Senator Limmer for the A3 amendment. I think though some things in there are worth discussing, but more thorough discussion is appropriate. So thanks.
Thank you. Are there folks here that would like to testify regarding Senate File 875, either in favor or against? Questions or comments from members?
Madam Chair, I...
Senator Limmer.
I move that Senate File 875 be recommended to pass and be moved to the Senate Finance Committee.
And, Senator, you mean Senate File 875 as amended be recommended
amended
to pass.
Pardon me, Madam Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The 875 is recommended to pass. Senator Limmer, we're making good time here. Senate File 846 regarding correctional facility inmates and healthcare co-pays. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, this usually the simplest of bills usually sometimes brings out the most discussion. I'm not trying to invite that, but nevertheless, inmate healthcare, for many of our members don't know that inmates do make co-payments. They're responsible to make co-payments. Although they're small, they're nevertheless co-payments. Currently, Minnesota law requires $3 for a medical co-pay, and this would allow us to consider moving that from a $3 fee to a $5 fee. And that's all that the bill
thank you. And there
covers.
Is a fiscal note,
that's
Mr.
correct, Madam
Turner?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. Department of Corrections calculated that this provision would bring in an additional $35,000 each year. Once again, like the previous two bills, this provision is in the House budget bill, and will probably be, if you decide to pass it, it will be negotiated in the conference committee.
Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Limmer, I understand that the counties will be able to charge this $5.
Senator Limmer. Perhaps Ms. Pontius.
I can't answer that for you. Maybe a council might know.
I know from personal experience, not because I've paid it, but working in the sheriff's office, they do have a health care copay in the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. I know that part, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I think you're right. I just, under the direction of the commissioner, under the control of the commissioner, county jails still are. You license them, so I was assuming that would this open up the ability for county detention facilities to be able to charge a copay, because I certainly agree with the bill. I think it's a good thing. It's going to eliminate a lot of the unfounded.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, one thing I might say is that it would be the intent of the author to have the commissioner have that authority of anything that he is in supervision of.
Sorry. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So to be clear, then, the intent is there. Is it somehow that I can work with you with as it moves on, we can put this in the county purview? Or I guess I didn't quite understand.
Madam
it.
Chair, I always look forward to working with any member of the Minnesota Senate, especially Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Senator Limmer.
And senators, I believe that we have counsel looking for the to confirm one way or another on that. So, but in the meantime, Senator Letts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. One is I'd be uncomfortable with allowing a provision to be worked on after it leaves this committee that should be subject to discussion in this committee. So although I respect Senator Ingebrigtsen's desire to maybe expand if it's not already covered, if it's something that this committee ought to have jurisdiction over deciding, I wouldn't want to cede that authority to some other committee down the road. But secondly, I wonder if Senator Limmer can explain the purpose of this bill.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair and Senator Letts, this is an opportunity to increase a little bit of the revenue. It's just like any other provision in our budget, we're looking for ways to bring in revenue, and we're offering this before the committee to consider. It's not a lot of money when you look at the comparison of the whole budget, but $35,000 is still a respectful amount that we should consider.
Madam Chair.
Senator Letts.
What, Mr. Senator Limmer, what would this revenue be used for?
This would be appropriated back funds paid, as if I can bring you to lines 11 and 12 of existing law, the funds paid under this supervision are appropriated back to the Commissioner of Correction for the delivery of health care services to inmates.
So, Madam Chair.
We aren't putting it into any general fund. It's just to add and enhance that particular dollar amount, as so written in state law.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, where do the funds come from now to provide the delivery of health care services to inmates?
I don't know. Perhaps someone from the Department of Corrections might be able to answer that for us.
And we have on the agenda Nanette Larson from Department of Corrections. Ms. Larson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Nanette Larson. I'm the Health Services Director for the Department of Corrections. And to answer your question, Senator Letts, we get a general fund appropriation for the delivery of health care to our incarcerated population.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Letts.
If this were to provide a savings to the general fund appropriation to the Department of Corrections, is that a separate line item or is that just taken out of a larger line for corrections?
Madam Chair and Senator Letts, it's included, the health care dollars are included in the facility operations line item.
Okay.
Senator Letts?
first of all, what is the purpose of the copay itself? I mean, at any level for inmates?
Well,
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair and Senator Letts, it's the same purpose as any copay for any medical coverage. It's to offset the public cost of providing health care, at least to this population. And it's to allow the individual to also participate in the cost. Some might even expand it as saying it may be something to avoid frivolous use of medical services and that the individual seeking those services may think a little bit if they're going to have even a small amount of personal loss.
Ms. Larson.
But just like any other copay.
Ms. Larson, do you have any of the information that would maybe put the context here? I know that the mandates for providing medical care for inmates is one of the biggest portions of your budget and one of the fastest growing. Could you just comment on that? I think what we're trying to accomplish here is maybe to provide for a user fee or at least a small portion of it. But if you would just comment about the context of your budget and how big a piece this is.
Madam Chair, The health care budget for our offender population, and when I talk about health care, it includes medical, dental, nursing, mental health care, chemical dependency treatment, and sex offender treatment. So there's six different disciplines that are included in the health services budget. My current budget's about $60 million. The way we provide that care is through a contract with Correctional Medical Services, which is a private health care correctional management company, and then a combination of state employees. I think, as Mr. Turner mentioned, the fiscal note on this is about $35,000 annually. We currently charge a $3 copay for offender-initiated health care visits. That generates somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000 annually. So it's not a moneymaker for us, but as Senator Limmer mentioned, it's it helps us manage the population. It helps us manage some of the volume and some of the utilization, just as it does for us when you have a copayment that you have to pay. So,
Ms. Larson, one other question is, does this then still, is it limited to offender, to offender initiated, or is it then this expanding it to all and raising that level to $5? Do I understand what you're trying to accomplish here?
This would, Madam Chair, this would continue to be offender initiated visits.
Thank you. Senator Latz.
Thank you. A follow up, Madam Chair. Well, I'm pleased to see the recognition that some more revenue is needed in the budget and that there is a way to get it, in this case called essentially a copayment, a user fee, or a, I might call it a specific tax on inmates, an almost doubling of that copayment, which would only be available out of the bottom 50% of what they earn when they're working, if they're working in MnCorp. 70% of those inmates who work in MnCorp are earning a dollar per hour or less for their work. The average is about $10.50 every 2 weeks worth of work. So this is not an insignificant increase for someone who's earning anywhere from 25 cents to a dollar an hour. And that they only get access to the funds after deductions are made from what they earn, which are higher priority, repayment of advances, gate money, court-ordered dependent support, court-ordered restitution, court-ordered fines, fees, and surcharges, facility obligations, I guess, unpaid medical copayments along the way would get higher priority before this, postage, shipping, key lock replacement, library replacement, civil action costs, federal and state filing fee portions, victims' reparation board contributions, and disciplinary restitution are all deducted from their gross compensation of $10.62 every 2 weeks. So, now because there's a maximum on that of 50% deductions, for someone who's getting all those deductions, and my guess is there's a fair amount of restitution from inmates that are being deducted, you might have someone who's earning $5 every 2 weeks worth of work, and they got a $5 copay. So you're talking maybe a week's worth of work as a copay to get a medical service that if they are not overutilizing is a necessary and important medical service. And frankly, it will end up costing the department more to provide a delayed medical service for a delayed condition that they didn't feel they had the money to get when they first needed the service. I don't object to inmates generally paying a little bit of the cost of their incarceration or something like that, but when they're in state prison and they aren't working in the real world, if they're in the county workhouse, you know, they can get work release, they can keep the job sometimes, and they might have some other sources of income. But when they're in state prison, I mean, they don't have that. So, I mean, I guess if the body wants to vote for a fee increase, I guess that's the will of the committee, but that's essentially what this is, and I think it's inappropriate to target this population.
Senator Latz, as I said, Hennepin County does do this, and Mr. Baucus has confirmed that in Minnesota law, counties do have the authority to implement co-pays for their short-term offender inmates and workhouse offender inmates. Senator Limmer, and then Senator Jungbauer,
thank you.
Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, that's one side of the ledger page that you've read from, but nevertheless, I think you also have to keep in mind that this population also is getting three meals a day. They don't have to pay for any room and board. After all, they are offenders after they victimized our citizens, and they've been found guilty in a court of law. The thing to remember is that this is only for inmate-initiated requests. In the event that an inmate would be found ill, sick, showing signs of some type of symptom, staff would direct them to whatever medical facilities that are in that institution, and that is at the full cost to the taxpayer. And so this is a very limited aspect of it. And keep in mind that not every inmate relies on the money in his account to be generated strictly from the work that he does in the institution. Oftentimes, relatives will send money into his account as well. And so keeping that all in line, I think this is a reasonable dollar increase to consider.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Limmer, I think he answered part of it, but I think Senator Latz inferred that if somebody didn't have the $5, they would be refused health care. Is that accurate? Would they be refused health care if they didn't have the copay?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair and Senator Jungbauer, absolutely not. If an offender is indigent, they will not be denied health care as a result of being unable to pay that copay.
Thank you. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, I know you can't deny them the health care because of constitutional issues, but is this legislation from the department, or is this something legislative? The reason I'm asking is that it seems to me the law allows you to charge a copayment, and it doesn't say in the law $3, but I understand from Senate counsel that it is $3. And this says at least $5 per visit, and we're just being told that at $5 is inmate-initiated, so presume a chemical dependency treatment program, which I think under your terminology is part of the healthcare system. In effect, if I'm an inmate and I'm in a program like that, I don't pay $5 each time I show up, I presume. But do you need the authority? I mean, my question is, can't you just raise the fee to $5 if that's what you think is appropriate?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I'm trying to think of all the questions that you answered here and respond to those. First off, this is not a department initiative. It is not in the governor's budget, and the department is neutral on this bill. With respect to chemical dependency treatment, no, we are not charging the offenders $5 every time they come to chemical dependency program. We do not charge them a copay for chemical dependency or sex offender programming.
Well, Ms. Larson, if there's an emergency or something, that's not offender-initiated, right? This is when the offender identifies his or herself and asks for treatment from a nurse or someone else. It could be Band-Aids or the offender requests treatment, not the offender requires treatment because of a condition. Is that how you distinguish this?
Madam Chair, maybe it would be a little helpful to explain how we provide care in our institutions. We run ambulatory clinics, kind of like you or I would go to. The offenders sign up for what we call sick call, and that sick call is triaged by our nursing staff, and then they're either put in front of a nurse or a physician. And that sick call, that how they sign up for sick call, is that determination. So if they're coming back for a blood pressure check, we want them to come back for a blood pressure check, so we would not charge them a copay. But if they're coming back if they're coming to see us because they have swollen glands and a sore throat, that would be an offender-initiated visit. If they are coming to see us because they have an infection in their hand and they want it taken care of, that would be an offender-initiated visit. However, once we resolve that infection in their hand, give them antibiotics, we would want them to come back and see us. We would not charge them a copay for that.
Thank you. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I guess that's my question, though. It says the copayment shall be at least $5 per visit to a health care provider. And you feel you don't have to charge that for a blood pressure thing or any of these other things. Because to me, those are visits to a health care provider. I wonder why the department was asking for this. If the department's not asking for it, I understand. That doesn't mean it's bad policy. It's just a question of, is it, do you have the flexibility to say, well, we are not going to charge you for a blood pressure thing, we're not going to charge for this. Doesn't this law require you would have to charge $5 each time?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, we have developed a policy that we believe addresses the intent of the statute and yet allows us to provide what we think is sound, reasonable health care. As I mentioned, we don't want somebody not coming in for blood pressure checks on a regular basis if we're going to be charging them $5 per visit. That seems a little bit unreasonable. So we've developed a policy where we don't charge for things like chronic care visits. That would include diabetes, that would include high blood pressure, that would include coronary artery disease. We are not going to charge something, we're not going to charge an offender when it's the provider who says, I need you to come back and see me because of this and this and this reason. So our policy addresses the intent of the statute and yet allows us the flexibility to provide care in a reasonable fashion. You had also mentioned about the $3 versus the $5. The $3 was in rider language a number of years ago when this statute was initially enacted.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Senator Marty.
That's all helpful. In other words, is it $3 minimum or $3 period is what's in the rider language?
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, it was $3.
Okay, so you would need this to change the amount. I'll only encourage you or the department's attorneys or Senator Limmer's attorney, Senate counsel, somebody to make sure this allows you, because I can believe what you're doing now is a reasonable policy, and I can believe what you're doing is complying with the law as we have it, namely that they shall incur copayment obligations for health care services provided. But when you're saying $5 per visit, it does strike me that unless you're going to define blood pressure, people giving blood pressure checks as not healthcare providers, this doesn't say in there inmate initiated, it doesn't say certain types, it doesn't say chronic conditions. All I'm saying is that before the bill becomes law, you might check with the attorneys, make sure there's not a conflict between this and what you're doing, because it could screw up, could cause a lot of problems if not.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Larson. Senator Limmer, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that Senate File 846 be recommended to pass and be moved to the floor.
To Finance.
Oh, Finance. I'm sorry.
Thank you. All those in favor of Senator Limmer's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. Senate File 846 is recommended to pass and sent to Finance. Senator Limmer, would you like to do Senate File 506 or 952 at this time?
Madam Chair, we're going to go with Senate File 506 at this time. Welcome to the committee, almost Madam Chair, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've had a bill around for a few years now, and I'm hoping that this committee will pass it and send it on. It's an important reform for our courts. In 1994, I moved to Minnesota after having practiced law for many years in Virginia and Washington, D.C. And one of my first cases was a trial. I was representing a plaintiff in a contract dispute. It was tried in Hennepin County to a jury. The dispute was in the amount of $19,000. I represented those clients for many, many months. All that was at stake was $19,000. We couldn't go to conciliation court. The only choice we had was to go to Hennepin County District Court. I filed motions for summary judgment to try and get early results. The motion for summary judgment was decided on the first day of trial by the judge who hadn't had time to look at the motion for summary judgment. So we tried that dispute, a contract dispute, to a jury. And as I said, the plaintiff actually won, my client won. And with all the awards and fees and things, I think that the award was about $21,000. Members, it's extremely expensive for our courts to be trying to juries cases that are in dispute for less than $20,000. It's a huge expense to the litigants who are looking for justice and have to spend that much money in attorney's fees or have to defend actions with that much at stake with their attorney's fees. And so I looked immediately to see what that general jurisdictional amount is for our courts and for our conciliation court. It's still $7,500 as it was in 1994. It hasn't been changed since then. And so when I became a member of the Minnesota State Senate, I thought we should change that jurisdictional amount to $15,000. I think I would go to $25,000, but there are folks that think that it should be less than that. And what this provision would allow is an early determination in a conciliation court. It's a very good thing for the perspective of potentially settling lawsuits, because when a conciliation court referee looks at the case, the referee will say, well, you know, where's your evidence? And we'll examine the evidence or maybe point out that there isn't sufficient evidence to establish a claim. And so it's really in the litigant's best interest to be able to take a case to conciliation court and not have to file in a court of general jurisdiction with attorneys and the high costs of litigation. So I think this is a very important reform. And just to have a little fun, I went and checked out what was going on in 1994, the last time we raised this level. And I just want to remind you that President Bill Clinton was in office. Sam Ortman, my 13-year-old son, had never been born. Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan were going at it in Lilyhammer. Apple sold its first license for a Mac computer in 1994. The Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, admitted their first female. The World Wide Web Consortium was formed that year. The Lion King was a big movie. Arnie Carlson versus John Marty on the ballot. let's see, the cost of a gallon of gas. Anybody got an idea? $1.09. It's been a long time. A movie ticket was $4.08 on average. A new car, average price, $12,350. And the media was following O.J. Simpson down the highway. So, members, I'm hoping that you'll support Senate file, let's see, 506. And we have some folks here that are willing to testify in support, and there may be folks that would like to testify against. But I welcome Mr. Clavin.
Senator Ortman, before your testifiers begin, I will tell you, members, that I fully support Senator Ortman's bill. What you will find is that without raising this jurisdictional limit, you literally leave folks without a venue in which to have their disputes heard, because quite literally for a $7,500 jurisdictional amount, you cannot hire an attorney to go into litigation. And with such a low limitation in conciliation court, they have no right of redress at all. So I would just indicate that I strongly support Senator Ortman's bill. Your next testifier, Senator Ortman, is your name, sir?
Bruce Clavin, for the record.
Yeah. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, for the record, Bruce Clavin represents the Cooperative Network, formerly known as the Minnesota Association of Cooperatives. We have very brief testimony in support of the bill, Mr. Chairman. We have a little nifty handout you should have by now that I actually put together, and I know that this is accurate. I went back to the session laws myself, going back to 71, showing the development of the law. Senator Ortman has mentioned the last time it was changed was in 94. Conciliation court allows the parties to represent themselves, and there's no discovery process, and it is far cheaper for both the plaintiff and the defendant in the court action. She gave me the history of the law. Let me tell you about the bill quickly. In 2009, she authored the bill for us back then. It was added as an amendment in this room one night to an omnibus bill. Senator Moi carried that all the way to conference. It's passed the Senate floor before in this form, and it was made to a conference committee. It was dropped by the House at that time, and that was 2 years ago. We didn't do anything on it last year, and so the Senate has passed it once before. With me today is our managing director, Amy Fredergill, who also would like to speak to the bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amy Fredergill, as Bruce mentioned, and I'm the vice president of the Cooperative Network, which a little bit more about our association, if you maybe knew us in the past, as MAC. We represent any business that's structured as a cooperative in the state, from farm supply, grain, and fuel cooperatives and dairy cooperatives like Land O'Lakes, down to all the little Senex gas stations, the farm credit institutions, housing co-ops, credit unions, healthcare co-ops, food co-ops, you name it. Minnesota is the number one co-op state in the nation, and there's over 1,000 co-op businesses in Minnesota. And we bring a lot of economic development and jobs, pay a lot of taxes in the state, and give a lot back to our local communities. Member owners of a co-op share equally in the control of the cooperative, and the way we operate is one member, one vote, no matter how much you own of a cooperative. And so we're democratically governed, and it's a great way for businesses to be structured. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of SF 506. As the senator mentioned, raising the limits reflects the inflationary costs of all the goods and services that, as you heard back in 1994, things cost a lot different at that time. And because our members are cooperatively owned, those increased costs for having to go to district court comes out of the pockets of their member owners, which are in large part in rural areas of the state, but also in urban areas as well. As mentioned, under current law, if the amount owed to a co-op is greater than the cap, the co-op is forced to go to district court, which really loses a lot of the efficiencies of conciliation court. Conciliation court is a lot more simplified, and for defendants results in savings due to the timely, expeditious nature. A lot of our cooperatives employ staff that do get involved with the collections process, and the staff end up spending hours and hours working on this. And so if we can simplify the process for them, those savings just go back to the member owners in our committees. And as just to kind of emphasize Senator Ortman's point, conciliation court is a very efficient process, which leaves district court available to do its job for some of the bigger jobs and to save the smaller cases for conciliation court. So in closing, I'd like to thank Senator Ortman for her support and for your time, Mr. Chair, and would ask the rest of the committee for your consideration. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for either of the testifiers from the committee? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I support your bill. I kind of thought $20,000 would be a good compromise between $15,000 and $25,000. It was interesting to see the chart that co-ops hand out. For a 5-year period in there, we really finally were catching up for a while, and then we fell behind. And I don't know what the magic number is. I just know that I think a lot of people just don't go to court because of it. But the fiscal note doesn't talk about any savings in district court. Is the assumption that everybody who would go to conciliation court isn't going to court at all now? Or did I read this wrong?
Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, anyone in the conciliation court has the immediate right to a trial de novo, and which means start from scratch and have an entire trial. And so I think that's been the basis of what I think are very cautious fiscal notes here. I think there would be more people that would access justice in conciliation court, and that there would be court savings, but that's never been a part of the fiscal notes as I've seen them.
And Senator Mr. Mark. Chair, maybe Mr. Turner knows, because he was around here by 90, 93-94, I think, maybe not. But, yeah, you were here then. Did we have a decrease in court costs when this passed last time?
Mr. Turner.
You know? Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, I don't remember that far back.
He's just a kid.
But the fiscal note is based on they're not saying people that are going to go to or would be going to district court are going to be going to conciliation court. That'll be the same amount of cases in district court. The fiscal note is based on there being more conciliation court cases.
Because, Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
I just happen to think there will be a decrease, a significant one, not anywhere near the number of increase in conciliation court. Senator Ortman, what would you think about an amendment to increase it to 20 and 10?
Senator Ortman.
Senator Marty, I would be favorable to that amendment. I've been proceeding cautiously because I think some people don't understand what this amendment or this bill is trying to accomplish, and it really is about access to justice and early resolution of disputes. And so I would appreciate that if the members can support that.
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to move on line 110 to strike 15,000, insert 20,000, and strike 7,500 and insert 10.
Senator Marty moves on line 1.10, strike $15,000, add $20,000, strike $7,500, and put in $10,000. Do any of the members of the committee have any questions regarding the amendment or comments? Senator Ortman, do you wish to address the amendment, or do you simply want to move
or
move forward with it?
Mr. Chair, I support Senator Marty's amendment.
Any further questions regarding the amendment, the oral amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move then that this bill be recommended to pass and sent to the finance.
I do have, Senator Ortman, an amendment in front of me. It's an A1 amendment that I'm going to ask Mr. Turner to explain, and then you can decide how you wish to handle the A1 amendment. Mm-hmm. Senator Ortman, do you have it in front of you, the A1 amendment?
I do, Mr. Okay. Chair, but I wasn't aware of this amendment. I'm not sure how it operates or relates to the underlying bill.
One moment. I'm going to have Mr. Turner explain the A1 amendment, if you would, Mr. Turner.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. What the A1 amendment does is takes the $158,000 per year that the bill would generate in new conciliation court fees, and rather than just have it offset the general fund, which it would just fall to the general fund bottom line, this appropriates the equivalent, $158,000, to the courts. And as you can see in the fiscal note, the courts say that the fiscal note points out that the increased activity in the conciliation courts is about the equivalent of $80,000 in workload increase. So it makes sense that we appropriate at least the $80,000. However, in discussing things with Chairman Limmer, we decided to draft the amendment to the entire amount. Now, this was $158,000 fiscal note was calculated off, the bill's original limits. I don't know if increasing to 20 and 10 will change this. But if the committee decides to put this amendment on, I'll revisit the fiscal note with the department or with the Supreme Court.
Senator Ortman, at this point, the A1 amendment is in front of me. It has not yet been moved. Do you have any comment or thoughts insofar as A1 amendment is concerned?
Well, Mr. Chair, this would seem to be a finance committee question and not one it's not an amendment that I've prepared or was really planning to address today. I guess the question is, if we adopt the A1, the savings goes back to the district court for its operations. If we don't, then it goes into the state's general fund. And I don't have knowledge about where current conciliation court fees go or anything like that. So I guess I would be open to the recommendation of the committee and to Mr. Turner as to how these funds should be appropriated.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, currently court fees are deposited in the general fund. The courts collect money for us, but they collect it for the general fund. People seem to think that what the courts collected goes, it helps fund the courts. That's not the case. The courts are funded on whatever general fund appropriation we decide. So currently, it would just fall back to the general fund. This would appropriate that money from the general fund, the equivalent to the court operation.
Senator Latch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know the exact number now, but in Hennepin County, I think if you file a conciliation court claim right now, you've got like a 6-month or longer wait before you get into court. I mean, the delay is already exorbitant, just because they're so overwhelmed with work. The fiscal note here does say that there's been some experience in other states where they had a small decrease, initial decrease and an increase. But in California, when they move from $5,000 to $10,000 jurisdiction, they had a 289% filing increase, which then sharply declined 2 years later. I would think if you're doubling the jurisdictional limits or more, you're going to either move cases from district court into conciliation court, or you're going to bring more cases into the system that would not have been filed because of the reasons that Senator Ortman stated. But now we'll have a place to be heard. So I think it would be a mistake to assume that we can more than double the jurisdictional limits and that there wouldn't be any caseload increase. So in effect, that would have to be funded out of the otherwise appropriated budget for the courts. I think it'd be appropriate entirely for us to at least cover those anticipated increases in workload by utilizing this jurisdiction. As Mr. Turner indicated, I'm certain from my own experience, most people think when they pay a filing fee in court that filing fee is going to help the court operate, when in fact it's not. And in fact, the court system brings in more money to the general fund than we appropriate back out to the court system. Their net revenue gain for the state, which I think is kind of inappropriate. But at least with regard to this, I think we ought to cover the costs. And so I'm going to offer the A1 amendment. I think it's the right thing to do with the understanding that, this is a budget committee as well as a policy committee, so we certainly can weigh in on that even if we're technically past the budget deadline.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Ask that fiscal take a look at the number in light of the updated jurisdictional limits in the bill.
Well, with Senator Latz offering the A1 amendment, we are no longer operating in a vacuum. Is there any further discussion on the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. I appreciate Senator Latz's advice, and based on what he has suggested, I think we should adopt the A1 amendment and then go back and make sure that our numbers all match up with some of the changes we've made here, but I appreciate his help.
Great. Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Senator Marty?
Just a question. The courts do have the ability. I mean, they were talking about it would need like one-fourth of a new judge for the conciliation court. Can they add more? In other words, if it really did have a sharp increase like California had, maybe Mr. Turner or whoever, can they add more? If we gave them this appropriation, they could, and that would enable them to do more. Can they change their numbers with the money? I mean, do they have the freedom to do that?
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, well, they can't create a judgeship without legislative authority, but they can certainly move their workload within districts.
Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted.
Now, Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to move adoption of Senate File 506 as amended, and that it be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, just throw this out for consideration by the committee, that the fiscal note makes an assumption of increased caseload, and the number in the A1 amendment was based upon that projection. But the revenues that would be reflected by that increased caseload is more than double that because of the influx of filing fees. And I wonder if the committee would be open to simply directing all of the revenues from any increase from filings in conciliation court back to the courts.
That's what it does.
To reflect that, since it's going to be really hard to predict the caseload impact at all. I guess I'll throw that topic out for consideration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Would you do it?
Any further discussion on Senator Ortman's motion or on Senator Latz's comment?
We debate the comment?
I guess that's what I'm asking for. Maybe I consider an amendment depending on sort of the feedback. We'll operate in a vacuum for a moment.
Yeah, Senator Goodwin.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, I'm just wondering if we don't really know for sure where that money goes now. We don't really know what their numbers are as far as the change will go. So I think that might jeopardize the bill, which I think is a really good bill, by the way. And I'm just wondering if we should maybe, does this now have to go to Finance Committee? Because if it did, then we could just maybe get some more information on that before Finance Committee. Does it have to go to Finance at this point now?
Yes.
The motion, Senator Goodman, is for it to go to Finance.
That I would just say that might be a good idea because we don't know how that will change the financial structure. And we could ask the courts.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Latz.
I think on consideration and that I don't want to muck up the success prospects for this bill with a larger debate about whether revenues that go into the courts, where they get divided up and assigned. So at least if we cover the costs related to the bill itself, I think that'll keep the bill on track, and I don't want to muck that up, so I won't offer any more.
Any further discussion? Senator Ortman moves that Senate file 506 be recommended to pass as amended and move to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Same sign opposed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your support and your help. Thank you. Senator Limmer, Senate File 952. We're back to a discussion about the public defender's representation provisions. It was a pretty broad conversation that we had begun, and I know that we had just begun. So I'm expecting quite a bit of discussion as maybe you all are. Senator Limmer, why don't you let us know where we left off here?
Well, that's a good point, Madam Chair. Yesterday we had a lot of discussion with public defenders. In our meeting yesterday, we talked about a little bit of the role of public defenders, but on the same part, we also realized that there's a lot of discussion about public defenders, especially this year. And at times, there's even some confusion about public defenders. And yet, as we begin to have that conversation, we keep hearing a growing and a unified or a uniform comment that the public defending system in the state of Minnesota is perhaps inadequately resourced. Their workload, in light of past budget cuts, has grown considerably with less public defenders doing the job that we once had. Senate File 952 was the basis of discussion yesterday regarding changes and modifications to the job of public defender and how we treat defendants, especially in qualifying them for service under public defense. We had a fairly good conversation. I know that a number of our members are not here right now. Do you want me to go through the whole bill now again in light of the fact that we were there already yesterday? We're kind of extending the discussion from that
Senator
time.
Senator Limmer, I think it would help members if you maybe told us what your intention is with this bill. I mean, not your intention as to, you know, what you're trying to accomplish, but what do you see are the next steps for this bill? And how can we help you with what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm trying to get a consensus from our committee regarding, first, how we qualify defendants in the need of public defense, such as in an A1 amendment that's in your packets. We have a consideration that's been presented to us in order to recognize household income, kind of a sliding scale. It might accommodate a cost savings. The role of public defense seems to have grown and shrunk over the recent years, and we're also addressing that in the bill itself. But it's basically the financial inquiry statements qualifying for co-payments if necessary and recognized by the courts in the event that a defendant refuses to execute, let's say, a financial statement so that the court could determine whether or not they really necessitate the need of a public defense, that it would be asked for, and if the defendant refused to provide any information of their financial eligibility, that would waive the appointment of a public defender. Also included on page 3, whether or not there's an ability to pay even a full or a partial payment or even a full payment. Qualification for this determination is necessary, and there's a number of ways to do it. I'm just wondering if the committee has agreement with at least this starting point for discussion.
Senator Limmer, one of the things I like about this bill is Section 3, where folks are expected to fill out financial disclosure statements, mm-hmm. and that we have the ability in the court to base these decisions on a financial statement, and then to deny the defense if there's a refusal. I think that's really important. It gives the court now some power to really use its discretion and its review to determine who is or who is not really in need of public defender services. I think that's a very good provision from my perspective. Maybe others have comments as well. But I think it would also help us, Senator Limmer, if I know we had heard from Mr. Kier before, and if he wouldn't mind, maybe he could just remind us where the Board of Public Defense is with your bill. I think that would help us.
That's fine.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Kevin Kyer. I'm the Chief Administrator with the Board of Public Defense. As I mentioned yesterday, the two issues that we talked a little bit about yesterday on this bill is in Section 3, line 2.11, where we're only considering the defendant's income. The statewide standard right now is household income. And then on line 2.13, the 150% of poverty level, I think I testified yesterday in front of this committee, there are a number of counties where that threshold is actually lower. And so you may end up with a situation that some counties you're actually potentially increasing the number of public defender clients, or at least those who might be found initially eligible. But the rest of the bill, you know, we're fine with.
Mr. Kyer, what do you suggest that we do to correct the disparity that's created with 2.13, with that 150%? Is there some way, perhaps between you and Senator Limmer, that you can offer an amendment to make sure that those outlying counties can be brought into the same standard?
Madam Chair, you know, the A1 amendment, I think, does that, where you graduate the percentage based on the severity of the crime, the misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, or felony. If, in fact, you wanted to go to one standard as opposed to three, I guess our recommendation would be to go to the 125, so you don't end up with those counties that maybe are already have a higher threshold, or I should say a lower threshold, I guess. But as I indicated yesterday on lines, where am I looking? On lines 2.16 through 2.18, you'll continue to have that judicial discretion if somebody cannot afford the reasonable cost charged by private counsel. So you do have that ability for some judicial discretion there. I think whatever you do, again, this was a recommendation of the legislative auditor that they would like to see a specific dollar amount or a percentage threshold in the statute. And again, to give more consistency around the state as the judicial branch is looking at these applications.
Thank you, Mr. Kyer. Senator Lass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a couple of thoughts, and maybe Mr. Kyer or Senator Limmer can give us some of their thoughts on it. One is, I can understand why some counties might choose a different threshold because the cost of living is different around the state, too. So someone who's earning at 125% of the federal poverty level in Kitson County has lower expenses. If they were at that level in Hennepin County, they effectively are more impoverished because it just costs more to rent an apartment and pay for food. So I can understand some variation. I wonder if there is any mechanism that could be used to account for that variation of cost of living around the state rather than setting a flat 150%, for example, statewide. I don't even know if it's possible to do that, but I'm asking the question. And then my other thought was that with regard to the graduated amounts, depending on the severity level, certainly that would be increase the likelihood that someone charged with a more serious offense has a public defender. But I'm a bit concerned about if the constitutional mandate for publicly supported lawyer depends on the severity of the crime. And I know initially Gideon versus Wainwright was, I think, just felonies only, and it eventually later got constitutionally extended to misdemeanors. But it seems to me if they are facing incarceration and are entitled to public defense, then the level of the offense may not be the appropriate reference point. But I'd appreciate some feedback maybe as to the grounds for choosing this mechanism in the amendment or some other option.
Madam
Mr.
Chair
Kyer.
And Senator Lass, I'll give it a try. On the first question, I think you talked about cost of living around the state. I think there's a flip side to that, too, is that incomes in some of those greater Minnesota counties aren't as high as maybe in the metro area either. So I think it's really an individual judge's decision. I mean, they you know, we've got 288 district court judges, and they're reviewing these applications. And as the auditor's report mentioned, the vast majority of folks who are getting public defender services truly are indigent. So again, we're not talking about a great number here. And there is a tendency, I think, to appoint public defenders because we're there. We've got the experienced folks. You've seen it in the courtroom that it keeps the calendars running. So there is some of that, and I think the auditor's office also found that out. Relative to the question on the percentages based on the severity of the crime, I can tell you there are some states that have that. Their number, Georgia, Ohio. I know there are at least a couple of others, and I'm not thinking of them right off the top of my head, that have had kind of these varying standards or these graduated standards in place. Again, as I mentioned yesterday, I think the key element to all of that is the phrase on 2.16 through 2.18, where you continue to have that judicial discretion, and that has been kind of the key element in the past of whether or not you have a constitutionally supportive standard. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Lance.
Thank you. Just a follow-up thought, I suppose it is true that you are more likely to actually get sentenced to workhouse or prison time if you're charged and convicted of a felony than if you're charged with, say, misdemeanor driving after a suspension case. So I can see some relevance to changing the standard there a little bit, too. Just sort of the need to have a lawyer. I'm not sure where the constitutional analysis falls and all of that. I'm kind of thinking outside of that framework right now.
Other questions or comments? Are there folks here that would like to testify either in favor or against Senate File 952 or the A1 amendment? There is a fiscal note, members, and Mr. Turner, we've not passed it out yet.
Yeah.
We're going to pass out the fiscal note, Senator Limmer.
All right. Thank you.
It does show that there's no fiscal impact to the state, but we'll pass it out to give some folks the analysis. Mr. Turner.
Madam Chair, members, I believe the guy who wrote the fiscal note is sitting at the table right now, but sections 1 and 2 don't show, say that savings can't be determined on potential workload savings. And 3 and 4, they say that the increase in payments cannot be determined at this time either. I think I would agree with Kevin Kyer's assessment that this is a murky area that it'd be very difficult to peg a number in. But if he would like to discuss the fiscal note.
Mr. Kyer?
Madam Chair and members, I think Mr. Turner's right. I think it's a difficult thing to do. Again, we have 288 district court judges out there who are going to be reviewing these. And I think, as I've talked about, is we're giving the court hopefully a more consistent tool across the state to do these. Are we going to have situations where some counties we may, even under the A1 amendment, you may end up with a few more cases? Potentially. But there are a number of cases, counties, where maybe you also have reduced caseloads. We just don't know.
Thank you. Senator Newman, we have before us Senate File 952 and the A1 amendment. Senator Jungbauer, we're at 952 and the A1 amendment. We're talking about the Board of Public Defense and some options for our courts to make some determinations about what the fiscal viability of some of the folks applying for our services through the Board of Public Defense. Questions or comments from members?
Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer, one piece
of background information. The other body in its fiscal bill, its finance bill that corresponds with ours, they have this provision, the provisions of the A1 amendment in their bill as a policy. And I'm trying to get some indication of where the committee may go if, or not if, but when we get before the finance committee and the conference committee, is there any indication of where this committee would like to go with this policy decision?
I'm not sure whether you said that either yesterday or today, Senator Limmer, but do you intend that this bill would go to the floor or to the finance committee?
You know, I don't know. I think the floor.
I think Senator Newman.
Madam Chair. I was thinking it had to go to finance, but I guess I'm not certain.
I think Mr. Turner might be able to give a suggestion to that.
Mr. Turner.
Madam Chair, members, we discussed the fiscal note. The fiscal impact is certainly it's undetermined. It is assumed to be fiscally neutral, and I think the bill could go to the floor. Would be my opinion.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Limmer, as we're working through this bill and other bills, you know, I'm always curious, and so on this one, when was the last time we worked on any kind of definitional qualifications for public defenders? Is this something that's, you know, been worked on recently, way in the past, or?
Senator
Limmer.
Or Madam Chair, I'm going to refer to my good public
Mr.
defender.
Madam Chair and members, this issue has come up every year that I've been here, and that goes back to 1987.
Do you know what the price of gas was then, Mr. Where was O.J. Simpson?
Right. In terms of substantial changes, boy, I'd have to go back and look, but it has been several years. And we went to the change that you see on page 2, on lines 2.11 through 2.12. That was the operative language that was changed to include the means-tested benefits. But, boy, that's, I got to say, 10 years for sure, maybe more. I'm thinking it was even longer than that.
Thank you. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies, members, for not being in the room. I've had now a chance to kind of look over the A1 amendment. I would say, members, that it would be my preference that we not offer the A1 amendment and simply proceed with a motion to move the bill. And I believe it's to the floor, at least according to Mr. Turner's recommendation. So that would be my feelings on it, Senator Limmer.
Senator Newman, if I could ask you a question, what do you do then with Mr. Kyer's comments about the different levels that might have application in other counties when he refers to lines 2.12 through 2.15? I'll remind you, you may have been out of the room. Mr. Kyer said that there are some counties where there would actually be more public defenders required because of the levels that they've adopted, and the state's level would not be standardized throughout all the counties and the state.
Madam Chair, I guess when I'm looking at this, I'm simply thinking that, you know, to break it down into these different categories, you know, as outlined in A1, I would prefer to simply move forward with, you know, just one level, everybody being treated the same, and let the system work out that way.
Mr. Kyer.
Madam Chair and members, I guess my only comment was the one that I made before, and I don't know, Senator Newman, I don't believe you were in the room at the time, is there are a number of counties where the standard is 125% Olmsted County, Dakota County that they use. I know there are a number of counties in the 9th District that's their beginning threshold, if you will. So if you do raise it to 150, or you should say raise it, but if you implement 150%, again, do we know exactly? No, I can't tell you how many more people would qualify. But I know there are a number of counties where that threshold is now going to be raised because that is what they are looking at, or at least partially what they're looking at.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Kyer, if I may, why is there a difference in certain counties?
Mr. Kyer.
Madam Chair and members, because you have somewhat broad language in the statute now, and there's, as I mentioned, 288 or 290 judges or court personnel that look at this. And I think one of the reasons for bringing this forward, and I know for Representative Smith bringing forward the bill in the House, was to give the court a better standard and a more consistent standard across the state. And I think that was the concern of the legislative auditor as well. So it is very, there's no requirement. I think you have a requirement in here that a one standard form be used. I know that there are different forms used in different judicial districts. There are different forms used in different counties within judicial districts. The state public defender is charged with producing the form, and it's in the rules, but there's no requirement that the individual courts use that particular form. So I think the implication was, let's try to make this more standard. The legislative auditor's office was, let's try to get a more specific standard in place so we have more consistency across the state.
Senator Newman.
If I may, then, Mr. Kyer and Senator Limmer, this matter is going to have to go to the floor. We undoubtedly will end up in some type of a conference committee on it. Perhaps we could move the bill forward at this point and then address some of these other questions at a later date. I'd be happy to visit with you about it.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, also on, let me make my comments on the A1 amendment. Also, there has been some discussion as well as observation that when we're looking at the three categories of the percentage qualification range, we're also defining the infraction, misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, and felony. And oftentimes, a misdemeanor, generally, it's begun to be a noticeable observation that those that are engaging in misdemeanor crimes are of low income. And gross misdemeanor kind of has a stepping effect, recognizing in general observation that the more involved you are in crime level, you also seem to have a little bit more of a economic bump at the same time. So that also would reflect that.
Madam Chair, if I might, I think the other issue, at least the discussion in the House I'll give to you, is that in relative terms, in terms of going out to finding private counsel, the idea of finding private counsel for a misdemeanor, it's a much easier and much lower threshold than going to find a private attorney for a felony case. A retainer for a felony case might be anywhere between $5,000 or $10,000 up front, depending on the seriousness of it. And so the thought is that if you're going to have that graduation in terms of private counsel, that would make some sense in terms of, the public defender thresholds as well.
Thank you. Senator Letts.
Mr. Kyer, does the Board of Public Defense have any preference as between the two mechanisms here?
Mr. Kyer.
Madam Chair and Senator Letts, the language in the A1 amendment is language that we actually proposed 2 years ago as part of kind of a broader package of public defender reforms. So the preference that we had was the graduated rate. Again, we're concerned with that 150% level just because of what I mentioned earlier. So.
I mean, members, I think that it's better to do something than nothing, even though whatever something we pick here is going to have some drawbacks. And I think this is heavy lifting here, Senator Limmer and Senator Newman. I commend you for the work that you've been doing to try and address this issue. There's still some work to do either between now and the floor or between now and conference committee, and maybe even what needs to be addressed next year in order to standardize what's happening here. And sometimes that's what we do. We take a giant step, and maybe sometimes we have to work out and just kind of finesse a few things. But I think we need to take this step in the right direction. But to the Board of Public Defense, I'm supportive of the fact that you're here and trying to work through these issues with us. I think there's more that I hope we can work on next year to standardize your practices across the state. I, for one, speaking only as myself, support that. That the legislative auditor taught us, I think, that we should have standardized expectations for what we do to provide public defense services. And so I hope that whatever happens here, you're going to be back at the table next year with some more proposals that help us work through these and maybe further finesse what we're trying to accomplish here this year. It's coming up tomorrow. Other questions or comments from members? Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, I'm thinking about Mr. Kyer's comments about the fact that it's generally easier for a defendant, particularly a low-income defendant, to find a private lawyer for a misdemeanor case than it is for a criminal case. And I suspect he's right about that.
Senator Latz. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Latz. Whether we approve or the A1 amendment or not, we can always continue the discussion both after today and in conference committee. Given the fact that Senator Latz has moved the A1 amendment, I will certainly not oppose that. Why don't we adopt it? Let's move the bill forward, and we'll continue the discussion another day, so I will agree to the A1 amendment.
All right. Questions or comments from members regarding the A1 amendment? Are there folks here that would like to testify regarding the A1 amendment, either for or against? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The A1 is adopted. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I have no other amendments.
So, members, we are back to the Senate File 952. And, Senator Limmer, would you like to make a motion?
Yes. I move that Senate File 952, as amended, be recommended to pass and go to the floor.
As amended, Senator Limmer.
I said that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions or comments regarding Senate File 952? Are there folks here to testify one way or the other regarding Senate File 952 as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senate File 952 signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Senate File 952 is adopted and recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Senator Limmer, we have no further business. I'm a little bit more efficient than you are.
I second that.
I asked him when we'd be done today, and he thought maybe 6. He just doesn't know me. Okay, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
Do I need to recognize you right now?
Yes, you do.
Close the meeting.
Madam Chair, I only had one question. Do you have any further bills before this committee?
We have tort reform day coming up, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair.
We will be adjourning until tomorrow morning. Is that correct, Senator Limmer?
We can adjourn today, and we will again
9 a.m. We
meet again at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. tomorrow.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lutz.
Who's going to be in the chair seat tomorrow?
I think he's back in charge, Senator Lutz. We may be in for a long day.